Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. When a Native man went through an airport security check last year, he asked the TSA agent to avoid touching his sacred items, a bone whistle, and eagle feathers used in Native American church ceremonies. But the security agent ignored him. His group sued, and the TSA recently settled. Agents are now getting training on respectful treatment of culturally sensitive objects. Coming up after the news, we'll talk about some of the things to look out for and protecting important items.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Rallies were recently held across Canada against the proposed 60-scoop settlement. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, during the 1960s, thousands of Indigenous children were taken from their homes by the federal government.
Those children were then placed with non-Indigenous foster families across Canada and even outside the country, some as far away as New Zealand. In October, the federal government announced that it had reached a settlement of $750 million with some 20,000 survivors. Each would get about $25,000. It also includes a $50 million Indigenous Healing Foundation. But the deal has yet to be finalized, and some of the survivors are pushing back, saying the settlement does not include many Indigenous and Métis people. Nora Cummings is a Métis elder.
Métis seems to always be the forgotten, and we're not going to let this happen because we too suffered.
A network of Indigenous survivors says the settlement was reached without meaningful consultations with survivors. Across Canada, the rallies were more than just about the settlement and money involved. Thousands of Native children across the country, about 52%, are in foster care. Robert Doucette helped organize the recent rally in Saskatoon.
They took our kids away in the residential schools, and we were powerless. They came a second time and took our kids away during the 60 scoop, and we were powerless to do anything. And it's now the Millennium scoop. They're going through it again. Well, we're not going to be powerless. We're going to say stuff about this, and it has to stop.
Indigenous Affairs Minister Carolyn Bennett acknowledges that the 60s scoop is a dark chapter in Canada's history and that there are other claims that have yet to be resolved. But she says the government is committed to resolving the issue, with the proposed settlement being a first step. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
There could be salmon above the Grand Coulee Dam this year for the first time in 70 years. That's according to leaders from the Confederated Tribes of the Colville in Washington State. As Emily Schwing reports, the tribe's Natural Resources Department plans to move the salmon by truck above the dam in early fall.
When the Grand Coulee Dam was built between 1933 and 1941, it effectively blocked salmon from traveling to the upper reaches of the Columbia River. But Cody Desitel says that could change early this fall.
So there was a lot of legwork that had to happen beforehand, like risk assessments and feasibility studies and habitat assessments, to know if we brought those fish back, would there be any negative repercussions. Most of that work is done. All of that work has said it will not, so now is the time.
Desitel directs the Natural Resources Department for the Colville Tribes. He says the plan hangs on one last federal permit from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. For years, the tribes have been looking for a way to return salmon above the dam. Michael Marchand is the chairman of the Confederated Tribes of the Colville.
When I was younger, I didn't think I would see those things.
He says his grandmother once pointed out the spot where his ancestors used to fish.
One time they lowered the water to work on the dam, and I was just a young child, and she said, "That spot on that rock in this island is our family's spot." And then I was thinking, like, why is she telling me this? This dam's going to be here for 1,000 years.
The dam remains, but if the final permit is approved, Colville fish managers will trap salmon at their hatchery and drive them around the dam by truck, where they'll be released back into the Columbia River. It's the next step in a decades-long process to reintroduce a viable salmon population on the river. I'm Emily Schwing reporting.
Over the weekend, Tohono O'odham leaders and officials from the Department of the Interior met in Arizona and discussed border issues. The tribe's reservation boundaries include more than 60 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border with tribal citizens who live on both sides. The Tohono O'odham Nation has long worked on border issues and opposes Trump's proposed border wall, citing a number of impacts, including environmental and cultural concerns. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at www.sanofsky.com.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Security at airports is already an intrusive procedure for Native Americans traveling with personal sacred items like eagle feathers or medicine bags, makes the process all more invasive. Transportation Security Administration agents who aren't trained in how to recognize and treat such items can create a serious breach in the proper respect such items require. That's what happened last year when Sandor Iron Rope, a Native American church leader, had his sacred items handled by TSA agents. He sued. Now the TSA reports it's working to make agents more mindful of personal sacred Native American items that go through airport security. We'll hear more from this case and from Sandor and his lawyer, but we also want to hear from you. Has your trek through TSA ever compromised sacred items in your possession? And what happened when you asked for certain items to be handled in a certain way, or maybe even not even touched at all? Was your request honored? And have you had to change the way you travel because of all of this? Do you forego taking a flight because you can't risk people touching sacred items without asking you? Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today from Rapid City, South Dakota, is Sandor Iron Rope, and he is the chairperson for the Native American Church of South Dakota and a former chairperson for the Native American Church of North America. And he is Lakota from the Pine Ridge Agency, and it's our pleasure to welcome him into the program. Sandor, thank you for being with us.
Yes, thank you for having me. Good morning, everybody.
Thank you. Also here with us from Minneapolis, Minnesota, is Forrest Tadanipa, and he is the lead counsel on this TSA case. He's a lawyer with Dorsey and Whitney Law Firm, and he is from the Comanche Nation of Oklahoma. Forrest, it's also our pleasure to bring you into the hour.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And gentlemen, I definitely want to give you a moment to go further on this story. I know we just touched on the simple details of it. And Sandor, I want to turn to you. Tell us a little bit about what led up to this lawsuit.
Well, first of all, I'd like to, you know, greet everybody, say good morning to all of our listeners, our executive officers of South Dakota, Adrian Primo, William Blacksmith, Krista Cooney, Paul Never Misses Shot, and our directors for continuing to represent our organizations locally here. And, of course, the National Council of Native American Churches, Native American Church of North America, Zeb Benahagav, the Nation, Native American Church of Oklahoma. What led up to this matter here was in my return route from a mid-year conference held in Mirando City. An incident occurred back in February of 2015. I believe it was February 20th or February 12th, excuse me. But usual routine checks with TSA. My carry-on baggage consisted of my sacred items. And carry-on baggage went through the X-ray and then the normal process of asking who this bag belongs to, and the TSA agent requests to see what's inside of it. Of course, at that time I said, it's my sacred items. they continued their search, and I told them what they would find in it. And they continued to open it, and I said, no, I'd open it for you. So then right at that point, there started to be, you know, some miscommunication or misunderstanding. I told them what they would find in it, but they continued to open it, and I said, no, I would open it for you. So from there, the agent knew that I was a little bit upset, and then went to get their supervisor. So then the supervisor comes over and then confirms with the agent that gives the agent a green light to go ahead and search my sacred items there. And at that time, feeling really uneasy, we just came back from a mid-year gathering and ceremony as well. So I was a little bit distraught about the whole process and not being my request not being honored or even heard. So the agent continues to aggressively go through my belongings. And all that time, the supervisor doing her best to calm me down, talk to me about policy and procedure that TSA has to comply with, etc., which I understood. Part of Homeland Security is securing the borders and whatnot, but you know, you could clearly see that it's nothing out of the ordinary. I mean, Native Americans normally are associated with feathers, etc. So you can see that clearly in the box, but I don't know what they're looking for aside from opening it and then going through it. I have my, of course, all my belongings that I travel with, and so they continue to go through it, and then when they're satisfied, try to stuff it in there in such a way that so the box closes. And I, at that point, I kind of intervened again and said, leave it alone. I'll put it back myself. The lack of understanding is that when you put your items in a box, it it sits in there in a certain way that it doesn't get smashed. And each individual kind of knows how they place things in their box. So, and especially with traveling such a distance, you place it in such a way that it won't get smashed up, banged up, etc.
And Sandor, I'm wondering, in throughout this entire process, what kind of things did you tell them about them being sacred items? Or were there certain words you felt that they ignored even when you were saying, you know, these are religious materials?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I said they're sacred. I use them. They're spiritual items. There's eagle feathers in there. You'll find what I use in my ceremony. Don't touch them. That wasn't honored either.
And when the supervisor was talking to you and telling you exactly, you know, things that they have to abide by, what are some of the things they told you?
It was what I recall is basic policy about securing the borders, etc., and about searching. I think there was a few. I don't understand what they really look for, but apparently the x-ray and then opening the box wasn't enough. So I know that she was trying to explain certain policies regarding TSA's searching.
All right. And I'm going to turn to your attorney on this case. And again, folks, does any of this sound familiar? Have you ever been traveling, gone through TSA, and had a similar situation? How did you react? What did the workers say to you? Did it cause you to turn around and not fly at all? You can join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And for several things going on here, and as you hear Sandor retell his story, what are some of the legal things that pop up in your mind or really push the case forward or even made you want to pursue some of this? Go ahead, Forrest.
Sure. Well, I first heard about this incident when I first met Sandor, which, you know, coincidentally enough, was at a Native American church meeting or ceremony. And he told me what had happened, and I had an interest in being involved with the church kind of in a way that I could be helpful, legally speaking, on a pro bono basis. So I was definitely willing to help. And right away, you know, my kind of mind started going on potential claims that we could bring. And kind of the most obvious one is a claim based on religious freedom. There was some prior cases that made a First Amendment challenge difficult, but there was something called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which kind of mirrors the First Amendment, but is a little bit broader in certain ways. So right away, I thought about a Religious Freedom Restoration Act claim. I also thought about constitutional claims under the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment is the one that provides you with security from unreasonable searches, and this seemed like an unreasonable search to me. And the Fifth Amendment is what provides your equal protection under federal law. So from my understanding, I thought that and believe that they would have honored requests from other types of religions. You know, I've never heard of them dipping their finger in the holy water of a Catholic priest. And so we brought a Fifth Amendment. We ended up bringing a lawsuit and ended up asserting all those claims, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act claim, and then Fourth and Fifth Amendment violations.
And Forrest, what was some of the argument from the other side saying that their conduct was just?
You know, the essential kind of thrust of their argument was just that we treat everyone the same and we need to give these individuals some amount of discretion to honor requests or not honor requests. And so we kind of just have a broad policy of we're going to search everybody, and maybe sometimes people will rely on other means. But in general, they said their policy was always to take the items away from the person. And so that kind of went against our request to have the traveler hold the items and manipulate them for visual inspection. In other words, to avoid having the agents touching the items by having the traveler lift it up so they could see what it was and see that it wasn't a threat to safety of an airplane. But they said, well, that goes against our basic policy because our basic policy is to always separate the passenger from the item, and it was something they called divestment. And so they were basically saying, you know, it's just our policy and we're not going to make an exception for anyone, and it would be too hard to have an exception for every airport when there's, you know, I mean, they kind of tried to downplay the number of potential practitioners, I think Native Americans in general that would be traveling.
And so, Sandra, when you heard some of this going on in court, what were your thoughts when you were hearing some of what Forrest just shared?
Well, you know, I understand a little bit of the law, just a tad bit. But, I mean, downplaying some of the spiritual practitioners. I mean, flying is kind of a new thing for a lot of us, but it's starting to become more common, and that primarily that's where TSA kind of intervenes. I mean, if you have ground travel, you're not going to run into TSA, obviously, but you know that it has some truth to it. But in the future, there certainly are going to be more flyers.
And so tell me what happened next in the case, Forrest.
So we filed a lawsuit, and the, well, to actually to back up a minute, before we filed the lawsuit, you know, I had met Sandor and I was interested in representing him and the Native American Church of North America on a pro bono basis. So we signed them up as clients, and then I started kind of asking around just to see, you know, if they, how common of a problem this was, and just hearing more experiences. And people, as I talked to them, would come forward, and they would have, you know, their stories. And a lot, one of the major stories was just like, one thing happened one time, and I decided I was never going to fly again because I didn't want to risk, I just didn't want to risk it. You know, sometimes if you have, for example, like what they call a chief peyote, which is like a very large, kind of beautiful-looking single peyote button, you know, it's oftentimes passed down from generation to generation. You know, I've heard of people that have a chief that, you know, belonged to their great, great, great grandfather, and it's 200, 300, 400 years old. You know, if you had something like that, I mean, you just don't want to take the risk of having that ever confiscated or, you know, taken or touched or whatever. You know, you're just not going to take a chance with something that has that much significance, spiritual significance to you. So, you know, I heard a lot of people say, well, I had one bad experience. I never want to travel again. I heard about people having, you know, their drums broken and their boxes broken. And this wasn't anything that was necessarily done with malice. Like, you know, an agent said, I don't like Indians, so I'm going to break your drum. But it was something that was just more done out of carelessness because they did not understand the significance and the power, spiritual power of those instruments. So I kind of collected these stories, and we got authorization from the organization to file a lawsuit, and we kind of laid out Sandor's story. We laid out the significance of the instruments. We laid out in the history of the religion in particular. You know, I think that oftentimes with litigation that involves the Native American church, there is a fight over whether there is kind of a legitimate, you know, is this a legitimate religion? Because sometimes the name of the Native American church has been misappropriated by people, oftentimes non-Indian people that are looking to use drugs. They're trying to, you know, use peyote in a non-religious setting, or they're trying to use other substances like marijuana, and they're trying to mask it with the religion. So I wanted it to be very clear in this complaint that we were talking about, you know, legitimate practitioners of the Native American church. And so I went into kind of the history dating back, you know, 7,000 years to archaeological sites that show indigenous use of peyote up in, you know, through the line to modern day, because I didn't want there to be any question. So we brought the lawsuit of I believe it was February of last year, and pretty quickly thereafter, the local attorney assigned to the case in San Antonio on behalf of the government contacted me and said, you know, kind of apologized that our pre-lawsuit correspondence that Sandor had sent complaining had not, no one had ever answered him. And I think that was kind of a part that added insult to injury, is that before he got a lawyer, he just sent emails to them saying, hey, this is what happened. You know, I'm interested in giving some sort of educational programming or just want it addressed in some way. And they would never even have the courtesy to respond to his emails. So the first thing they, when we got the lawyers involved, their lawyer apologized for that and then said that they were interested in settling. So we invited them to come to the annual convention for the Native American Church of North America, which was happening in Rapid City, South Dakota. So we had a day-long settlement conference there where they met with Sandor, they met with some of the other officers of the Native American Church of South Dakota that he mentioned earlier today. We met with officers from the Native American Church of North America, from some of the Navajo officers. We met with all of their lawyers. They had a local Texas attorney, and they also had attorneys from Washington, D.C. And we kind of hashed out the basics of an agreement, and then from there, we just shuffled paper back and forth about different term sheets until we finally arrived at one that was acceptable to everyone.
And so now I understand that they are implementing cultural sensitivity. Is that actually happening, or, you know, is it in the planning phases? And who is doing the training?
So there are two different types of training that our settlement calls for. One is a written materials training, and that's in the form of something called a job aid, which is a short written kind of brochure that is published by TSA that is available on its intranet website. And that was written as part of the settlement agreement. So we had an input into what it says. And it was jointly written. They had an input, and we had an input, and that was part of the back and forth after our initial meeting in South Dakota, was kind of getting to language in the written training that they would agree to that we also felt like addressed our needs. And so that has been written, and I have received confirmation recently from their lawyers that they have indeed assigned that as a as required for certain agents in certain airports. So they have they've published it. They have assigned it to them, and it's a mandatory training for those agents. There is a second part of the settlement, which is a webinar training that is required for a set of agents that's less than the written training. And that webinar is still in the process of being produced. And that, again, will be a joint effort between SANDOR, the Native American Church of North America, on one side, and then the TSA on the other side.
And you know what, Forrest, I'm wondering, maybe we have some folks who are connected through the TSA area. Have you gone through some of this training, seen some of these items that were produced because of this intersection? You can join us. We look forward to your calls. This is Native America Calling, and if you'd like to join us again, you can call us at 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Forrest, anything more to add on where things stand in the training?
No, that's about it.
And Sandor, how do you feel about all of this, the outcome of the case and where things stand now?
It's a positive. Anything that is agreed upon that the any government department is willing to collaborate on, you know, cultural sensitivity, I think it's a plus. You know, the reason for this is, you know, for a lot of members that do start to travel via airplane, and their concerns. I mean, it was, you know, when we talk about spiritual items, there is a spiritual connection with these items, a history with them, and a energy that is moved around these altar places. And so we really like to keep these spiritual items as much as possible tainted from outside energies. There's a lot of issues going on with the lack of understanding, and certainly certain agents, female agents, being, you know, in a certain condition and then touching our sacred items. So there's a lot of training that is needed with that. So this is the first step, and I feel satisfied that you know, my request, like Forrest mentioned, were ongoing. I was submitting via email, did their online, you know, the request. I did their, you know, complaint on via web, etc. Nothing was happening. And so it was good timing that Forrest and Dorsey Whitney decided to help us in that matter. And like I said, it's a first step, but I mean, it's an awesome step in developing, know, this understanding to the First Nations, the indigenous people of this continent.
And that's critical in understanding in all of this. And I'm wondering if there are people who haven't heard of this case or even know that some of this is being incorporated with TSA. You can join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We did reach out to TSA to have a representative. Our request was not met, but if there's somebody who can answer or comment, please do. Our phone lines are open. Schools for Native American students are among those considering ways to keep kids safe. The recent nationwide student walkouts shine a light on the seemingly intractable issue of gun violence in schools. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk about the latest ideas for school safety and why it's not as easy as arming teachers or banning certain guns.
Oh. Keshe, it's April 2018, of April 2019, and Donya Miss Medicaid cards Archimona Woti now. Look at cards, it's Dona Yalena Archimona Wopa, and again, I quest Dona and Social Security numbers open, Nashua. I can quite Dona identity, the fuck I act on Nashua. It's 1-800-633-4227, and Benanagan, and that is Medicare.gov, and now on. Look at Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Dona Benanitulok, and now. Elakwa.
Kewanic Broadcast Corporation announces the Alaska Native Art Auction will take place on April 4th in Anchorage, Alaska. This one-of-a-kind event will include amazing artwork from the Alaska Native community. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. If you would like to contribute artwork, reserve a table, or sponsorship, go to knba.org. Proceeds benefit Native America Calling, KNBA, and Native News Programming.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and Native America Calling broadcasts every Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to noon Mountain Time. And we focus on Native American topics and issues. And if there is something you'd like us to cover, send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And if you want to take a look at our show, you can there on our website. And you can also take it along with you. You can subscribe to iTunes and Stitcher and hear some of the conversations that have gone on. And today we are talking about protecting sacred or religious items while traveling or in any situation where they might come in contact with people who may not understand the significance of them. This kind of thing happens when people are traveling with their work, maybe even traveling to a powwow, and sometimes they even happen at powwows where people are awestruck and want to touch dancers' bustles, hair, beadwork, all without asking. What do you think about all this? And what do you think about some of the moves that we heard are going on because of the case that was brought forward with the TSA? Do you welcome hearing that conversations are taking place? Changes are being made. More information is being shared. You can join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And what are some of the ways you think folks can be proactive about protecting things and educating others about the importance of sacred items? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls. You can also send your tweets to us at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Right now, we're going to take a call. We're going to say hello to Carol in Martin, South Dakota, listening in. Carol, thank you for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Oh, hi. Wopila Chichapi. Thank you for this opportunity. Good morning, Brother Sandor. I'm his big sister. I just wanted to comment on what him and what they're doing on behalf of all of our Native people when it comes to sacred objects. I traveled a lot. As a consultant for the National Indian Child Welfare Association. So I observed a lot of things too. And at one point there was two young women that were trying to get to a Sundance with their sacred pipe. They had to call people to come get the pipe because they wouldn't let it on the airplane. And the other thing with that, traveling with sacred objects too, you never know if that TSA agent is female, and if she's female, she's on her moon. And those of us that are Native know that when we're on our moon time, we can't be around sacred objects. And so that's the other thing that people have to be aware of, you know. And for us, you know, it's important because that energy, like my brother talked about, also comes from people. And so even not on their moon time, but it affects the sacredness of our things too. So I just wanted to offer that too and thank my brother and Forrest for taking this on for the rest of our Native people, because I think that our sacred rites are important to us as a Lakota nation, and not just our nation, but all the indigenous nations of our people. And here it is, 2018, and this cultural competence piece, because I don't want to call it sensitivity. I think we're beyond that. People need to be culturally competent when it comes to working with Indigenous people or people of color. And we all have our language, our communication, verbal, nonverbal. We all have our worldview. We all have our customary behaviors and our values, especially when it comes to our spirituality. And those still need to be respected. And here it is, 1978, when the Freedom of Religion Act came, and here we're finally being able to do our ceremonies, and still we still have some problems, like with 2018, and we still have racism, and we still a lot of people still lack a lot of cultural competence when it comes to the original people of this land. So I just wanted to thank you this morning for this opportunity to be able to voice this. I was just on the radio with Keeley, and thank Keeley for hosting Native America Calling, because we all get a lot of information from that too. And my show has been there for 26 years on traditional child-bearing practices and also our Lakota culture. So I want to thank you and have a safe journey.
Carol, great to meet you, and a fellow radio lady. Can't wait to look more into your program and hear what you're bringing to your Indigenous airwaves. Thank you for giving us a call there in Martin, South Dakota. And we've come a long way, and there are still speed bumps, and we're talking about some of that today. If you just tuned in, we are talking about carrying personal sacred items, either when you travel. I know we're focusing in on what happens when you fly and going through security check with TSA, which, by the way, I do want to remind folks that we did reach out to them. We sent requests for a representative to be on the program today. Our requests were unmet, but our phone lines are open. If anybody would like to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Are there other places where you think this conversation belongs, or you'd like to see some of the things that have come out with TSA doing some of this training? Are there other places? What about when you travel by other means? What about places where people are wanting to check what is going on? What do you got in your bag? And it's sacred items. What happens when you are explaining to a person what they are? And what happens when you ask, I prefer you not touch them? You can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Right now, we're going to go to a gentleman who is on the road. We're going to say hello to Robert Tree Cody. He is an award-winning Native American flute player, and he is also an actor and powwow dancer. He is Salt River Maricopa and Dakota. It's our pleasure to welcome him for another program. Tree, thank you for being with us.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, and come down. I could the question to be much kind of good morning to everyone.
And Tree, we appreciate you being here. And I understand you've also had some unfortunate experiences traveling, going through the TSA. I know you're on the move. And tell us a little bit about it and anything you want to reflect, just hearing what we heard from both Sandor and Forrest.
Well, I've had quite a number of experiences through the TSA in regards especially to my Native American flute instruments and as well as my dance troupe, Native Wisdom Dance Theater. We've had several incidents with the TSA where I've had to actually lay some law down onto the agents when they were going through our stuff. One example was when I was on my way to Chicago one time. I do bird singing in regards to respect to my Maricopa people. And what they did was I had my bird rattle with me along with my other instruments in my hand drum. And what they did was the guy goes, oh, what's this? And he throws it on the counter and he smashed it. Total. I was livid then because that rattle was given to me by one of the elders of the Mojave people out of Park, Arizona. But not only that, I've had other instances too where I've had one guy look at my flute instruments and made a sarcastic, oh, you're Native American, huh? Well, these look like blowguns to me. And I said, can't you see? These are Native American flute instruments. I still say they're blowguns. I said, no, they're not. They are Native American instruments. And if you're not careful, you are going to be in violation of my rights as a Native American to travel these instruments to my destination. Now, with our Native Wisdom Dance Theater, We have had several instances coming back from Ireland one year. As we were coming through Bewee, we were stopped again right there with the TSA. And my lead singer, who wears a war bonnet, was highly, highly upset at the way the TSA agent opened up his bag, grabbed his war bonnet, and just literally threw it on the table with no consideration whatsoever to the sacredness of the eagle feathers that he had, and other instruments too as well. So I too, as a Native American entertainer, actor, and performer, have gone through these type of situations with the TSA.
And so, Tree, knowing some of this, has it changed the way you travel?
Oh, yeah, most definitely I have. I don't take the airplane no more. Me take them railroad. Iron horse. I go take the iron horse everywhere I go now.
And even today, you're traveling by road. Tree, when you think of all this, you know, what do you feel is really at the heart of understanding? Or, you know, is it a trust issue where somebody's saying, you know, this is a sacred item? Do you feel that that's being questioned in some of this?
Yes, it is. In my knowledge and my through my experiences, I do feel that, yes, it is, you know, because of the fact is that these people here that work for the TSA, there are very few that are Native. There are very few that work in under the, as Native Americans that do work for the TSA. It's mostly the black people, the relatives of the black people, or the white people, whatever. And they are not basically given these type of schooling, or there's a word for that, to keep them aware as to what these items are. When I traveled last, my last travel was to go to my last year of my Sundance back up north. I had a note that I had written and typed out and printed out on my computer and put it on the paper. And it says, to whom it may concern. And it gives these sacred items, our sacred items that are used in sacred ceremony, everything. If you value the sacredness of these things, please be considerate in observing these instruments and everything. And when I got there, yeah, well, evidently that helped out. But in other cases, too, I had another dance. And we went back east, way back east, to do a show. As we were coming to Cleveland, these guys were terrible. The TSA man came over there and he goes, what's this? You don't have a right to carry these things. And these were my dancers, eagle feathers, and gee, I put away. This is his stuff. And when he said, I said, yes, we do. I want to see paper. I said, we don't need to show you any kind of papers whatsoever except for tribal identification cards, sir. And he started being very adamant. He ripped open the plastic container, grabbed the eagle feathers of my dancers, and my dancer went livid on it and tried to stop him. And that's when they called security on us. When they did that, that's when I told them that these guys are in violation. I put the law on them like that. And I requested a supervisor. It took that supervisor a half an hour to get to where his office was to where we were. But after I got after these guys and everything like that, they basically let us go through. Unfortunately, my dancer had three feathers broken because of that.
And you know, that's something that is not good. And just hearing some of this, I bet there are people wondering, okay, well, what are my rights? How far, you know, do you let them go? And what do you do when things are broken? Tree, hang tight. I want to bring our attorney in. Joining us from Minneapolis, Minnesota, is Forrest Tadanipa. And he is the lead counsel on a case with TSA concerning sacred objects. He is a lawyer with Dorsey and Whitney Law Firm, and he is from the Comanche Nation of Oklahoma. Forrest, you just heard Tree's stories and some of the incidents that him and people connected to him have faced going through some of this. I'm wondering, what are a person's basic rights? Or in those conversations, did TSA make it clear, okay, this is your right, this is how you should proceed, should an incident be unfolding? Forrest?
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, it's absolutely just heartbreaking to hear stories like that of people having their sacred items disrespected or broken. The TSA, obviously, you know, in America, we each have a freedom to exercise our religion and our, you know, within that, if you have items that you need that are necessary to the exercise of your religion, they are entitled to protection under the law. And that's in the First Amendment, and that's also in the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. The TSA, in that case, you know, they would always say, well, we have a compelling interest. The government has a compelling interest in ensuring passenger safety. But under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that compelling interest is limited, where they can only further that compelling interest through what's called the least restrictive means. And that's the least restrictive means of interfering with someone's exercise of religion. So that was kind of the dialogue that we were always having with them. As it stands today, they did not admit any fault in the case when they settled it, but we did affect some policy changes, I would say, or at least changes in how they are articulating their policy to their agents. And so I would just kind of like to highlight a couple things. The number one thing is that they are now, the officers and the agents that are receiving the training are being instructed that they are absolutely not to question someone's religious beliefs, that if they are told about a Native American person's religious beliefs, that they are to take that belief seriously and also to respect that belief. They are being trained to follow kind of an escalating inspection protocol where you're to first to rely on X-ray inspection, and if that results in an alarm where they believe that there is something that is a threat to passenger safety and to airplane safety, that then they are to resolve that alarm only with visual inspection, where the traveler can take out the item and place it on a flat surface or turn it over and manipulate it so that they can try to use visual inspection to resolve any alarm that they might have. After that, if that's unsuccessful, then they are supposed to go up to something called ETD screening. A lot of us might be familiar with that. It's where they kind of have some gloves on and they have a little piece of cloth that they rub on your baggage, and then they do a chemical analysis of that. You can ask that they change their gloves. You can ask before they do that. You can also ask that they have a wand that they connect to that so that they're not directly touching that. And you can also ask for a male agent to perform that. They're being trained to honor requests to have an agent of a particular gender do any sort of screening. And then only if all of the above fails, they're being trained to only use physical manipulation if absolutely necessary to resolve a screen after the other methods have failed. So that's kind of the basics of the training that's being implemented now. This training is going out to a subset of agents. It's going out to those with supervisory duties in Albuquerque, Durango, Farmington, Great Falls, Montana, Laredo, Texas, McAllen, Texas, Minot, North Dakota, Rapid City, South Dakota, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, San Antonio, Texas, Denver, Colorado, Phoenix, Arizona, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Omaha, Nebraska, and Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. If we wanted to get every single airport in the nation, but unfortunately that was not a possibility, so we kind of tried to target airports in regions where we felt there was going to be a higher volume of Native American travelers. There's also, this training is going to go to people called passenger support specialists, and these are agents that I was not aware existed, but they are agents that are going to receive this and have already received this written material training, and they are agents that have a little bit more experience. They are designated as this passenger support specialist, and they have a little bit more experience on the job. They have no history of discipline or that sort of thing, so they hopefully are a little bit more professional. And if you call ahead of time, you can have your screening conducted by the passenger support specialist, who will meet you at the airport ahead of time and then go through the screening with you and conduct the screening, rather than just relying on kind of, you know, any, just whatever agent it happens to be there. Maybe it's their first day, maybe they're having a bad day or whatever. So those are kind of the things that you can use to your benefit when going through screening.
All right. Thank you for that. Also want to thank Robert Tree Cody for also chatting with us. And I got one more voice to bring in. We're going to go to Newtown, North Dakota now to say hello to Lawrence Baker. He's an MC for the Denver March Powwow. He is Mandan Hidatsa and Rikon Ban of Luseno Indians. It's our pleasure to welcome him in. Lawrence, thank you for being with us. And as we mentioned, Denver March, well, that means a lot of people may be traveling there to Denver. And so a relevant topic. Definitely want to give you a moment, your thoughts on some of these changes. But this also extends to even there at powwows, where, you know, people are touching things they shouldn't be. Lawrence, go ahead, jump in here. Anything you want to share?
Good afternoon. A wonderful array of sunshine, I guess you would say, for our people going through TSA. We've all had these kind of stories. We all rely on the trust of Homeland Security and the TSA to keep us safe. But again, we also would like to endure having that right to take our items across. That's why I think a lot of our Native people heading to Denver are either on the Iron Horse, on the train, or actually driving. It's very difficult to go through TSA and, of course, in the States to try to stay out of that kind of limelight and explain all your outfit. So I'm glad to see the starting of that. This is really monumental. In the arena, we try to tell our people right away, for especially our non-Native group in Denver that's going to be with us, that there are a lot of special items that our dancers have. Not only passed down generation, of course, a cost, also some of the items have been given to us sacredly through grandparents and great-grandparents, some that are not no longer with us, some that encouraged us. So very priceless, if you would, artifacts that we wear and some designs that we do. So when we get together, the first thing, of course, I do, trying to be in that way of trying to have people not tempt them of touching right away, because one of the things people like to do is, what is this? Let me touch that. What does that feel like? To basically say, have some courtesy, some powwow etiquette. And if you want to take a picture, get a hold of them. Be very cognizant of their outfit. Be very cognizant of their regalia. Some of the things they have been are sacred to them, ceremonial, what they come into the arena for and to do, especially the drums, especially our people, you know. So we try to make them more cognizant of all of this. But again, you know, good things to know from TSA. This is a start. Everything is always a start. And we hopefully make it bigger and better for our people. So this is really good to hear.
And Lawrence, and just thinking of the powwow circuit and what folks, you know, are bringing to some of this, what do you feel that another discussion that needs to be happened about other places? I know we were quickly mentioning powwow, but this is any time, you know, you go through security checks or even if your vehicle is being searched by the police. Any other thoughts on some of those spaces?
I like the whole thing starting, the talk, the table, and hopefully making it better. I don't think any of us are trying to commit any atrocity against our original birthplace of us, indigenous people, and then crossing the border. I know crossing the border, sometimes the security searches there are a little bit tough, but you just have to let them know, of course, when they see your federal card or your Native American card to cross because of our treaty rights, especially into Canada, you tell them, hey, I have sacred objects. I have things that are bringing. And would you like to look through them? I will show you. And of course, they're like, no, we know that. We know you have the right to cross. And they allow you to cross. Sometimes coming back, they want to be a little bit harder on you. But again, you know, we're not trying to to take anything away. So basically, we're always open to show and share our culture. But, you know, again, the whole thing of having somebody go through things that have a spiritual essence and a positivity and the things that we're trying to do in our Native American church and our way of life, it kind of gets a little bit taken aback by touching and feeling and their curiosity. So I think the whole open discussion of doing these in different places is awesome.
All right. And Lawrence, any final words to folks who might be traveling to Denver March? Any good wishes for them getting on the road?
Be careful. Be safe. We hope to see you there. And again, prayers and everything for all of the people that we go through in our day-to-day lives and the things that they endure. And hopefully they bring it forward more to be talking wonderful discussions like this. But again, be safe. Get on the road and take your time.
Definitely. Good words. And you know what? That is it for our hour here. And maybe you're hearing some of this. You never knew this is what Native folks go through sometimes when they're traveling, especially if they're traveling with sacred personal items. And there's something more you still want to say, or maybe this made you think of something or an incident. Feel free. You can reach out to us. You can send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. We are also on Facebook, and our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We do appreciate everybody who joined us this hour, and look forward to reconnecting with some of these folks and in more work that they're doing throughout our Native nations. Thanks again to our guests, Sandor Iron Rope, Forrest Tatanipa, as well as Lawrence Baker and Tree Cody. Safe travels there, Tree. And we look forward to adding your conversation to one of our topics this week. We're just getting started. This is Monday. Tomorrow, we're going to get into a discussion about gun control and school safety. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Marino Spencer is our engineer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. Thank you again for joining us. And we encourage you to check us out online. That's where you get to see all of the programs that are being planned for this week. And you can also hit rewind on many of the conversations you've heard on these airwaves. Thanks again. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Are you a Native American woman in business or looking to start one? You can join 200 Native women April 13th and 14th at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center in Albuquerque for the inaugural Native Women's Business Summit to connect, learn, and share collective experiences as Native American women in business. Information, agenda, and registration at nativewomenlead.org or by phone at 505-705-1790. Support for Native Women's Business Summit and this program provided by New Mexico Community Capital. Program support from AmeriCorps Vista. AmeriCorps Vista members make a difference in the fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining valuable skills. We have rewarding service opportunities around the country, focusing on economic opportunity, healthy futures, education, and more. It will change your life and the lives of others. Information at americorps.gov/VISTA.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.